Call in to ask.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Mel Show. And now, your host, Gary Mel.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Mel. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to learn about how Swansea University in Australia did some research and found out that Manuka honey could eliminate the deadly drug-resistant bacteria in cystic fibrosis infections. That's a big deal because we have millions of people worldwide who are suffering from the bacterias, MRSA among them, that no amount of antibiotic is able to cure. Well, this is good news. That Manuka honey, that's M-A-N-U-K-A, Manuka, can do this. It can do a lot more. And we're going to give you that information, how to treat wounds and fight infections with it. We have about 10 more health and nutrition segments. Then today, because we did that heavy-hitting original investigative reporting piece yesterday on Wikipedia, two more coming, one on Friday, one on Tuesday. And then we're going to focus on how credible are their sources? And we have about 100 separate articles challenging the legitimacy or objectivity of their sources. So if you're claiming something is wrong because you don't like it because someone that you trust says it's wrong, what if that person you trust is wrong? And that's exactly what we have found with Wikipedia when it comes to health and complementary medical issues. Today, we're going to have a segment from an environmentalist who says why everything will collapse. Well, when will it collapse? How will it collapse? And then I'm going to offer my own counter-commentary to that. And then Malcolm X has a few words that Jimmy Dore was playing about liberals and why that's more relevant than ever. You must be aware of them. At least today, the corporate liberals. I would agree with that. And I don't know if we'll have time for a bank collapse in China and why there's $40 trillion of debt heading towards an economic collapse and China's yuan crash. But we'll get into that and why that's relevant to the United States and the entire world economy. So what should we do about it? First, you have to understand the legitimacy of the problem. If anybody whitewashes it or downplays or soft pedals the crisis we're in, then people will not feel that there's much or anything they have to do, and therefore we will look the other way as that tsunami comes at us, that debt tsunami. Please write down the numbers, because starting on Friday, we're going to go back to answering your questions. And so here is the number. If you would like to, I don't even see that number right now. Oh, yes, I do. It's our voicemail number. For any question that you have or any issue you'd like to discuss or comment you'd like to make, if it empowers the audience, we're happy to have it on. That number, 862-800-6805, 862-800-6805. If you'd like to listen to the program live and for some reason you're not able to through your computer or radio, here's the number you can always listen in. Write it down, please. 774-337-6068. 774-337-6068. But we found about 98% of the people listening to this program do so by downloading it in the evenings. And with one phone call, you can download five different programs. 701-719-9976, 701-719-9976. A story first concerning infections. We were doing a retreat 2 years ago in April, and the staff was meeting before the guests arrived. The guests were arriving at 5:30 when we do an orientation, walk them around, familiarize them with everything, and then serve them a gourmet vegan meal. But this was 10 o'clock in the morning. And Barbara Duncan, who is a 40-plus-year nurse in all areas of nursing, outstanding nurse, came in and said, "There's a gentleman outside, and I don't have him on our list of guests, but there's a terrible smell." So we got up and walked out. We had several nurses and a couple of physicians who were all on staff, and there's this very tall gentleman. I think he said he was 6'7". He had been a basketball player and a professional basketball. And he said that he was sorry that he had notified us. He was not a guest, but he was in a clinic or a hospital in Los Angeles, and he was waiting for his pre-op. He was going to have the next day his leg amputated because of gangrene. They feared septicemia, and that would kill him, which is true, that would. And so he thought, what the heck? If I'm going to lose my leg, at least let me see if there's anything else that's possible. So he just got on a plane, and he had wrapped his leg in cellophane to try to diminish the smell. Even with cellophane, it didn't diminish the smell. So the nurses and physicians said, let's see what you got. And there's this massive gangrene. And several suggested he just go to the hospital. But he said, I don't want to go to the hospital because I know they're just going to cut my leg off. So I said, okay, here's a protocol. And so we went to work on him. 2 weeks later, he had no gangrene. He had no infections. He was walking, no odor, and brand new skin was coming in and the fibroblast cells sealing it up. We followed up with him, and a month later, he was completely 100% healed. You'd never know he had an infection. But in the last conversation I had with him, I said, look, when people come to an environment like this, even though I do no diagnosing or treating, I promote wellness, but from a different mindset, with different gifts of understanding energy. If you go back to your old lifestyle and your old diet and your old lack of hygiene, and he explained all this to me, he had a junk food diet, then you're just going to end up having this happen all over again. If you stay with the protocol you've been given here, the healthy juicing and the healthy foods and the exercise and the stress management, then you should just gain even more health. And he agreed. And 1 year later, he came back with gangrene in the other leg because he said he stuck with the protocol until he got around his friends, and his friends said, well, you know, let's celebrate, you know, this you're being too strict. And so where he was strict for about a month, he lost that strictness, and then it was right back to the old habits, and the immune system collapses, gets an infection, and he was diabetic, but when he was there, his blood sugar was normal with no meds. This is common. We have thousands upon thousands of amputations at toes and feet and legs, fingers, because of diabetic neuropathy. It is absolutely epidemic. First of all, diabetes is completely reversible, type 2 diabetes. And I believe diabetes 1 is due principally to vaccines. But we healed him again and said, that's it, don't come back. And he left with no gangrene. And we haven't followed up, so I don't know if he stuck with it or not. But time and again, when you have an infection, people never think about something like colloidal silver and Manuka honey and all different types of natural antibacterials that you can use. In fact, during wars in other countries and during the Civil War in the United States, those who were familiar with old-fashioned homespun wisdom would use bee propolis. Now, bee propolis is what bees create, and they line their hive with it so that anything being brought back into the hive will not infect the whole beehive and kill it, which could happen. And that bee propolis is one of the most powerful natural antibiotics known. Well, now we see also that Manuka honey, and it depends upon the grade of the Manuka honey, it's graded from zero, and I've seen as high as 150. That's very expensive. It comes in little bottles. Costs about $100. But for the good, powerful, I would say 15 to 25, you'll see a number with a plus sign. And that's its grade. The higher the grade, the more powerful it is. So when antibiotics fail, and antibiotics can be and have been a lifesaver, but they're overused, then it works against us. Then start looking at ways of building up your natural immune response and looking at what nature's medicine cabinet has to offer us. So this research comes from the Swansea, that's S-W-A-N-S-E-A University, which is a highly respected university in Australia. And they found that Manuka honey can help treat antimicrobial resistant respiratory infections, especially the deadly kind that can strike people with cystic fibrosis. Just as a little background, one of the biggest problems that cystic fibrosis patients face are long-lasting respiratory infections. Now, these infections are often deadly because they contain bacteria that resist antibiotics. And although lung transplants can sometimes help these cases, it's not a foolproof approach as there are a lot of potential side effects and the possibility of reinfection. Also, when you have organ transplants, you have to turn off the immune system, so they give you a number of drugs that literally turn off your immune system. Well, now that's not good if you have any local focal infections, because then you're going to get a reinfection and have no immune system to fight it. And for some patients, the type of bacteria infecting them can damage the lungs significantly and even prevent them from being lung transplant candidates. That's why an effective way to kill these types of bacteria is so important. So along comes Manuka honey. It's been shown to kill antibiotic-resistant bacteria in surface wounds, so the researchers decided to look into using it as an alternative to antibiotics in cystic fibrosis patients. They treated grown bacterial infections in lung tissue from pigs with Manuka honey to see how well it performed. They compared it to the action of three antibiotics that are frequently used for such infections: ciprofloxacin and tobramycin, and they found that it killed antibiotic and antimicrobial resistant bacteria by 39%. The antibiotics, on the other hand, only were 29% effective. And at the same time, it improved the activity of some of the antibiotics that weren't effective on their own. So a combination of the honey and antibiotics killed a remarkable 90% of the bacteria tested. That's a very important understanding, because Manuka honey has been treating wounds as far back as the 1300s, and it was monofloral, which means mono, M-O-N-O, floral, F-O-R-A-L. It means comes from the nectar of just one plant species. And in this case, it's the Manuka tree, also known as the tea tree. And what makes this type of honey stand out is its high amount of a methyl glycosyl compound, which is effective in fighting several types of bacteria. It also contains DHA and leptospirin. And so just make sure you always have Manuka honey in your house. It's that simple. From Tokyo Metropolitan Institute of Medical Science comes a study about a person's psychological well-being at 50 years of age could impact cognitive functioning at nearly 70 years of age. And it's just common sense, you don't need a study to figure this out, that whatever your psychological state of mind, when you hit 50, all you have to do is project ahead and you're going to really have a lot of inflammatory side effects of de-stressing inappropriately. And the authors used data in women born from 1946 in a British cohort Medical Research Council National Survey. And there was significant association between greater personal growth and lower self-acceptance at 52 and better cognition at 69. So in lay language, it means when you're in your 50s, early 50s, do everything humanly possible to get yourself into a good place, emotionally, physically, because that's definitely going to add years onto your life or take years off. From Oregon State University, an article published in the peer-reviewed journal Molecular Nutrition and Food Research shows that hops and agents within hops can help with metabolic syndrome while reducing microbiome diversity. So compounds from hops can combat diabetes by changing the gut microbiome and altering the metabolism of acids produced in the liver. That is the new research. Once again, they're finding all these wonderful phytonutrients in plants, and therefore the plant becomes what we call functional food. It actually functions in a way to enhance our well-being. From the University of Bari in Italy, another study on probiotics and nutrition absorption capabilities in healthy children. So according to this report out of Italy, recent advances in translational research showed that dietary nutrients have critical importance to the microbiome balance in the gastrointestinal tract. Therefore, the alteration of the intestinal microbiota in order to achieve and restore and maintain favorable balance in the ecosystem and the activity of the microorganisms present in the gastrointestinal tract is absolutely necessary for the improved health conditions of the whole body. So just in lay language, it means that when you have a healthy, clean diet, clean meaning fresh, locally grown, non-sprayed produce, you're going to have a healthier gut. When you have a healthier gut, you have a healthier body. From the University of Montreal, published in the Canadian Journal of Psychiatry, when children watch a lot of screen activity, when they're on their computers or on their telephones, it creates a higher level of anxiety. And that's why a lot of young people today are so stressed, because their communication is this non-personal communication, this vacuous communication, this lacking in intellectual critical thinking communication, this lacking in registering with people on a one-to-one basis as human beings, not just friends or likes. And so the old-fashioned way of just fitting in, meeting people, being accepted, being rejected, we've all had that happen, and getting over it, understanding, hopefully with parents, plural, parents, we've just gone through one of the most foolish episodes in American history, with two straight generations thinking it was absolutely cool and unnecessary to have both parents. And many times these come from high-level achieving professional class individuals with high levels of education, skills in their field, and careerists. And there are about 17 million of those. So you got to figure, even if one child per family with a partner, you're still dealing with about in the neighborhood of 70 million people, upwards of between 60 and 70 million. So it's a big deal. And so everybody wanted to achieve, and along the way we wanted all the perks to show that our life was together. We couldn't have one car. If there were two people in a family, we had to have two cars, and we had to have multiple television sets, least off anyone actually have to go to a room that we always used to go to, which was a living room or a playroom, and watch television together. No, everybody's got to have a television, in fact, in the bathroom and everywhere else, just in case you never are unconnected to the Internet. And we don't need to do any research. We don't need to do anything. We just need to ask that little Alexa, what day is it today? How do you spell my middle name? I forgot. So needless to say, when people are faced with real issues, with real people, out of the comfort of their bubble, they don't know how to respond, and they go into anxiety. high levels of suicide, addictive behavior, and just spoiled brat behavior, as if somehow they're entitled. Wow. I just got an email from someone who is going through a rough time, and I'd help this person, but the person comes from a very entitled background where no matter what mess the kid made, there was always a parent to clean it up and still keep giving him these wonderful accolades of how brilliant and smart and creative he was. No, he's just a typical spoiled brat of a rich person who has no respect for anyone and expects to be indulged by everyone because he's rich, and therefore kiss the ring on the hand. No, you little spoiled brat, meet life, and the next time you end up with a disease, remember who not to call, me. All right, because that's what we're faced with today. A whole nation of both adults, their parents, and children who are just rotten to the core, unfortunately, and yet they're just the models of social acceptance. We've got to like them. Look how famous, look how successful, look how talented, look at, they're the best of the best. No, they're not. They're just human beings. We've got to get out of this idol worship. The sociopaths are controlling our perception of what is normal. You know, these red, white, red carpet people. And yet I counsel them one-on-one without the red carpet, without the retainers, without the hairstylist, without the digital correction of their facial and physical defects or limitations, without their lawyers, publicists, just as a person sitting across the desk from me. My God, they're the most pathetic people you've ever seen. These are not the people who are going to save you from anything, least off themselves. If there was a tsunami coming, they would first have to call their psychiatrist, they'd have to call their therapist, they'd have to call and see if there are any fresh bunny rabbits that they can go in and sit with and de-stress. And as it's approaching, they just have no comprehension of life. We're not honest about that. We have a problem being honest. We don't like confronting this kind of behavior, just like we don't like confronting political correctness so everybody can stick up their ass. I want to be as politically incorrect as a human being could possibly be just to defy them because no one's defying them. The comedians are even being cowardly and pulling back. You realize you couldn't have today George Carlin, Don Rinkles. You couldn't have Dick Gregory. You couldn't have Mort Saul. You couldn't have Lenny Bruce today. He'd be booed out and shamed. People pull their hair out and, you know, and set someone on fire, not themselves, unfortunately, in protest because they can't handle that. When did we allow these lunatics to start controlling what is considered acceptable behavior since they've done nothing in the world to prove that they deserve our attention or respect? They're just there to whine, complain, blame, and show that how petulant and vulgar they can be with no sensitivity, no intellect, no sense of philosophy, no sense of history, no sense of social discourse, not helping with anything. They wake up in the morning looking for someone to take care of them, and if not, to be angry at that person and the rest of the world. And we tolerate it. We shouldn't. We should become intolerant of their intolerance because ours is speaking a truth to their petulance. And instead, we allow that to happen till one day you just go to have a conversation and suddenly you have to watch every word you say. Every pronoun, every adjective, everything that could influence someone to question whether or not they should feel a certain way about what we say. My God. Shame on us for allowing this spiritual vulgarity to manifest. In any case, just understand, when your kid is learning from a computer instead of in real life, when you haven't had the chosen to take the time to be with them and give them the lessons and the discipline that they need, if you hire the nannies and you hire everyone else, and you put them in the private schools, you've just created an altered human being who will never fit in. And that's on you. It's only on them once they're old enough to understand why you should have been castrated or used a condom, because you sure as hell aren't a good parent. And I'm calling out the parents for having children as if somehow this is another trophy to put on their wall. But I don't hear anyone else talking about it, so I'm in an echo chamber with just myself on this. So be it. University of California, Los Angeles. A study finds even a short-term visit to a severely polluted city. There's Los Angeles, where you lose 8% of your intellect the moment you step off a plane. It's automatic. It just registers. You walk through and I'm dumber. But now you're more polluted. Yeah, University of California did a study. There are many things people research when planning a vacation or business trip. But they'll look at the weather, how to get around a city, where to access free Wi-Fi for most. But one of the most important pieces of information that some people don't like to look for, because they don't think it's important, is the city's air pollution levels. A new study by researchers at UCLA shows that even a short-term visit to a severely polluted city can be detrimental to your health. The study involved 26 non-smoking healthy adults, average age 23, who traveled from Los Angeles to Beijing during the summer of 2014-15, and the study were split into two groups and blood samples taken, and then when they came back, blood samples were taken, and wow, get this. They found that when they looked at the cities that had higher levels of pollution, there was a greater oxidation of fats causing increased heart inflammation, a change in enzyme function associated with heart disease. The study also found that these individuals had up to 800% greater concentration of air pollutants in their bodies than before they left. So, air pollution does matter. And that's from the peer-reviewed journal Circulation. Games can protect thinking skills in older age. University of Edinburgh, which is in Scotland. So people who play games like cards or bridge, chess, are more likely to stay mentally sharp in later life. It's that simple. Nothing complicated there. Curcumin shows benefits for people with severe depression. Murdoch University in Australia. Quite simply, and this is from the Journal of Affective Disorders, a mainstream peer-reviewed journal, when you put curcumin, cumin, C-U-M-I-N, into your body, I'm suggesting 700 to 1,000 milligrams of curcumin, it could be effective in reducing depression and anxiety symptoms. So that's important. And finally, from the Medical University of Innsbruck, which is in Austria, probiotics boost athletics' immune system and defenses. So taking daily probiotics can help boost your immune system, especially if you are, a regular athlete, and reduce the risk of upper respiratory tract infections. And that is all good. I'm Gary Noll. That's the latest on health and healing. We're 28 minutes into our program. We're going to take a break, and when we come back from the break, we're going to play a little clip, and the clip is why everything will collapse. Now, this is a commentary from a person in the field, and then I'm going to give a counter commentary, and then I'm going to open the phone so you can call in and share your points of view. Our talkback number is 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. So listen carefully to what this person has to say, and whether you agree or disagree, you'll have a chance to share your point of view.
But mostly, I'll explain why it's completely unavoidable. By now, you're probably aware we're in the midst of a biodiversity collapse. We are experiencing the sixth mass extinction at a rate greater than when dinosaurs were wiped out. When you take out 50% of all terrestrial wildlife in 50 years, there's going to be some repercussions. Regarding oceans, the loss of 90% of whales and sharks has unprecedented impact on phytoplankton. Whales have a boost effect on both phytoplankton and krill, while sharks are the apex predators that regulate the entire marine food chain. Without them, this chain will topple from its base, which happens to be phytoplankton. What is phytoplankton? It's microvegetation that absorbs CO2 and produces oxygen. It's estimated that over 50% of our oxygen originates from oceans. Yet another problem is that reduced phytoplankton means less CO2 absorption. The oceans can no longer purify the air in a world where pollution is increasing. For phytoplankton, the loss of whales and sharks aren't the only threats. There's also plastic waste, acidification, dead zones, oil spills, noise pollution that prevents mammals from singing and mating. And for the rest of marine life, it is estimated that, and recent findings would show this to be extremely optimistic, our oceans will be empty by 2048. If this happens, or if we go anywhere near it, we are entirely screwed. I will conclude by talking about coral reefs, which migrate from south to north and are undergoing massive bleaching in tropical regions, an absolute disaster for local biodiversity. Only, tropical coral is not particularly adaptable to temperate climates, and it mostly just throws a big fat wrench in the engine of temperate zones' biodiversity. There's also the exchanges of warm and cold bodies of water that are changing at a staggering speed because of the melting of glaciers, which has a direct impact on major ocean currents like the Gulf Stream. If this stops, and some scientists now refer to it as nearly certain, that's virtually all temperate climates that stand to be affected. With less heat comes less evaporation and less clouds and less rainfall. We don't just have oceans, there's land biodiversity as well, and this one happens to be in complete agony. On the topic of agriculture alone, you need only know that nearly 95% of our soil's life has been lost in the past 60 years. You can blame this on the use of pesticides, fungicides, and herbicides, on the reasoning that fields must be plowed, on a production-based approach that inherently disrespects the life of soil, resulting in diseased vegetables, designed to withstand pesticides, but sorely lacking in genetic diversity, which threatens their resilience. As far as terrestrial mammals go, we've encroached upon their turf so badly that they struggle to survive, or have no other choice but to live near humans. A good example is the wolf. We know that each wolf covers immense territory, but we insist on leaving them increasingly little space. We then wonder why they attack sheep. Is our response to concede land? Of course not. We kill them. In France alone, they are killed at a rate of 40 per year in a population of only 300. Brilliant. Turning now to humanity's voracious and growing appetite for energy. Our society is terminally addicted to energy, and most of our political and economic decisions perpetuate the misconception that energy sources are somehow infinite. So, about energy. We mainly use oil, coal, and gas to produce energy. All three currently represent 92% of the world's energy production. As for the remaining 8%, 4 comes from nuclear, 3 from dams, and 1 from what we call renewable energy. Today, we're literally betting the farm on these last three, but they're just a drop in the bucket as far as global production goes. And they're not exactly the holy grail. The energy production itself doesn't lead to emissions, but it kicks in with a vengeance come storage time. Batteries. Storage is required for such forms of energy, unless you intend on using your solar-powered lights in broad daylight and shutting them off when the sun's out. Would you? Probably not. The most carbon-stingy energies today are nuclear and hydroelectric dams, but this raises a whole bunch of other major concerns. Radioactive waste and risks of meltdowns for nuclear, environmental devastation, and habitat destruction for dams. In short, there is no such thing as clean mass energy production. It just doesn't exist. And in terms of oil production, oil wells are seeing their returns on investment plummet fast. It's defined as the number of barrels of oil you produce for every barrel spent on extraction. In the 1920s, the ratio was 100 to 1. Today, it is dangerously close to 10 to 1, or even as poor as 4 to 1 in some cases. In short, we're consuming more and more oil in order to extract and produce less. Oil has never been so costly and inefficient. In fact, this peak oil you've heard so much about was in 2006. We haven't produced more in a year ever since. Experts believe that this will remain through 2020, at which time we will observe a steady decline. By the way, there is peak gas as well, and this happened in 2010. peak coal will hit by 2020. And I sincerely doubt that we have the necessary resources to make a full switch to renewable energies. Speaking of which, the production of metal can't last forever either, and demand for metal grows with every passing day, largely thanks to electronics, but very much across all industries. The problem being that most metal simply isn't recyclable. Less than a single percent of rare metals in our phones gets recycled and reused. Here's an example. 95% of titanium we use isn't in the form of a metal. It's used as a universal white pigment. It's therefore in all our titanium white paints. Think we'll start sanding our white walls to recycle that titanium? No, it's lost. It's the same with the 3% of tungsten alloy present in some car doors. It will never be recycled back into pure tungsten. This doesn't just apply to metals, which theoretically could be recycled almost endlessly. Plastic can be recycled no more than 7 times. After that, it loses its properties. In short, a circular economy is a pipe dream. It can't be done. The problem with rare metals? Mines are bearing less minerals, which means we need to dig more for the same yield. Once again, we're seeing a declining return on investment. I won't list out all the metal peaks we can expect, but rest assured, metal shortages are coming. All this to say that given the context, building solar panels and generators using all these metals in order to offset other energy sources is misguided. But hey, there's still going to be an economist who will state otherwise, and the dream might catch on. Now, onto animal farming. Breeding and feeding animals consumes large amounts of food and water. Instead, we could be using this to feed our own selves, or to offset our heavy reliance on production fields. Farm animals also produce methane, a greenhouse gas considered to be 30 times more potent than CO2. Livestock consumes an astronomical amount of water, which contributes to deforestation in the Amazon and overfishing, as fish byproducts are often used to feed pigs. As for slaughterhouses, I won't dare dig into the ethics, though I certainly could. Energy production, metals, transportation, animal farming, all of them pollute, and as such, they all contribute to the increase in global temperatures. If all countries signed on to the COP21 agreement make good on their promises, which isn't a given, we could expect global temperatures to rise by 3.5 degrees by 2100. 3.5 might not seem like all that much, but trust me, it's disastrous. Are you sitting down? Here's what that number represents. The Arctic melts completely. Oceans expand, sea levels rise. Florida no longer exists. Miami and New York are gone. Bangladesh and a bunch of Pacific islands get wiped out. The glaciers of Tibet melt, so come summer, the 3 major rivers of Asia, including the Ganges, run dry. Major problems befall densely populated areas. Shanghai is located at the gates of a desert. Rainfall turns rare across the Mediterranean basin. Crop yields drop, forcing millions to migrate north, where resources are insufficient to accommodate exploding populations. Oh, and for those who might say, relax, that's in 2100, do you honestly believe that everything will run smoothly up until December 31, 2099? If the 3.5 degree scenario plays out, and it is apparently rather optimistic according to many, Miami and New York are actually gone by 2050. Among other scenarios, one is labeled with a 10% chance of occurring, which would see a 6 degree global increase. In this case, expect total annihilation of mankind. And if you feel 10% is low enough to rest easy, I dare you to hop on a plane that has a 10% chance of crashing. You'd probably think twice. What about that 2 degree increase, you might ask? Well, we've already released enough carbon to raise global temperatures by 1.25 degrees, which only gives us 0.75 degrees worth of wiggle room to meet that target. I'll make this short. To achieve that, we would have to divide our current standard of living by 6 immediately. This isn't what we're doing, nor is it in the plans of any of our governments. Let's move on to more immaterial things, though central to the argument over systemic collapse, the human collective. What better way to address this than to discuss our financial system? The crisis of 2008 showed us that risky bets taken by a few banks were all it took to trigger a global financial crisis. This is very much due to the interconnected nature of our society. Reckless miscalculations on Wall Street can cause job losses in Spain. All financial experts agree the next major crisis will strike within 5 years. My limited knowledge of this field make me fear this as well. A population that is already suffering from economic inequality is more exposed than ever before. economic inequality is more glaring and it's only expected to rise. This increases the risk of revolt. Given everything I've described so far, major societal unrest could greatly complicate things. I've given you a broad view of the systemic risks that we will be facing. I will now explain why, given the context, a global collapse is completely unavoidable. Here are the reasons. Humanity doesn't perceive these dangers as truly imminent, but rather as hypothetical and seemingly distant, and it will refuse to fully prepare for them or make the necessary changes to avert catastrophe. Also, actions being taken by our governments are not aiming at true emission reduction. We continue to feed and maintain a system that is slowly but surely killing us. Big change will not happen from the ground up. Globally, we are not sufficiently coordinated. Here's a simple example. Someone decides to avoid taking the plane as an environmental gesture. His buddy becomes a minimalist, his sister goes vegan, and her cousin decides to consume organic only. Great. The gestures are individually relevant, but collectively, they lose their importance. The vegan sister will go meatless while others don't. The action gets drowned out. The cousin cuts on heating, but others still have it on full blast. Gesture lost. To be effective, the changes need to be applied across the board. Furthermore, it might be fairly feasible for groups of friends to coordinate their actions, but not so on a self-managed global basis. Change from the ground up is, in my view, unattainable. Now imagine for a moment if a government dared impose drastic, sweeping measures to limit the height of the fall prior to collapse. It would be besieged by its angry population and should probably expect to be thrown out come election time. People would never, ever agree to something as extreme as a six-fold reduction in living standards. Regardless of the how, a majority of people would never renege on their comforts, and that's without counting those that don't have what Westerners call basic comforts. How do you figure they'd react to being told to scale back considering many don't even have running water? The Indian president said ahead of COP21, "All you Westerners and your kind words, I will take global warming into consideration the day my people enjoy your standards of living." The fight against inequality is a pressing issue, and it is up to wealthy countries to lead by example. Sadly, they won't do it because nothing fundamentally drives them to it, and chances are, they wouldn't even know how to divide their standard of living by six. At the political level, the fix is in. The most glaring evidence being virtually any environmental advisor within government ranks. They are ultimately powerless. They must operate within the system, and as such, bend to its every whim. Our governments, which reflect our society, do not account for ecology when planning. Nothing will change on that front either. In short, a change from the ground up is a big stretch, and policy change is just about impossible. It's a deadlock with no solution in sight. Hence, a collapse is inevitable. So what do, you might ask? We continue to live. We prepare for blissful simplicity. We aim for zero waste, reduction, and reuse. We strive to inflict the least possible harm around us. We nurture all things local. We grow our own vegetables. We learn new skills, we build communities towards sharing, independence, resilience. But above all, and most importantly, we must not forget to love each other.
There was a movie called Soylent Green, and they were showing what could happen in the future and how bad society had become. It lost all of its nature, its trees, its birds, butterflies, animals. People lived in total squalor, and people only had several types of variety of a chip that they could eat each day. And these chips were called Soylent Green, but it could be Soylent Orange, Soylent Red. And you were supposed to get all your nutrients from it. And Charlton Heston was in the movie. He was the lead, and Edward G. Robinson and Brock Peters. Those are the three main characters. And Charlton Heston's character was a detective, and he had adapted to this. He had adapted to the squalor. When he walked up to his apartment at night, he had to step over. People were sleeping on every step of the stairway. And at the top of the stairway was a man sitting on a chair with a gun to prevent anyone who wasn't actually in the building with an apartment. His apartment's a tiny little apartment. And in a case of a murder of a wealthy person, the wealthy people, they lived in different buildings, and they had air conditioning, and he actually saw, for the first time in his life, he saw jam, and when he tasted it, it was wonderful. And he took a teaspoon of this home and gave it to Edward G. Robinson. Robinson tasted it, and he also gave him a little tiny apple and a little stalk of celery, something he had not had in 30, 40 years. And Robinson began to cry. He says, what have we become? What have we been reduced to? And Robinson was able to prove that the person who was murdered that night was on a board of Soylent Green that actually manufactured all this. In any case, the book that he was using to show how the future was going to be, the year that everything would collapse, was 2019. I remember that. And then in the end, it showed when Robinson had said, I've had enough. I've lived too long. I want to go home. And there was a center where you could go to, and people went in, stood in line, and then they had some choices. You know, what kind of scenery would you like to see? And they would take them in and disrobe them and put on a sheet. And they laid down on this couch. They took this drink, and the drink would allow them to stay conscious for 20 minutes. And then up came all these scenes of the ocean, a deer, nature, horses running through the field. And it reminded him, as I'm sure other people, of what once was there that no longer for a long time had been. They had maladapted to what society had become. And even in the most, let's say, depreciated society, there was still income inequality. Those who had the money could still have private farms, grow vegetables and fruits and things for them that the average person couldn't. And then after the music ended and you see his eyes close, and then they wheeled him in, and behind the scenes you see that he's thrown into a truck, like a garbage truck, and taken to a plant and put into a vat. And then he's dissolved, and he comes out as, you guessed it, Soylent Green. And Charlton Heston ran back to say, we're eating people. Soylent Green is people. And, of course, nobody wanted to be bothered by that. And I show that as an instance because right now there are so many wonderful places on this planet, including in the United States, and especially the United States, where we have such diversity, where we see nature at its best, from the Grand Canyon and Montana and also Wyoming and Grand Tetons to Maine and clear down into the bayous, Mississippi, Louisiana, the coastal forest of South Carolina, North Carolina, and Georgia. No shortage of beautiful places, but they're dying. Just today, I mean just this morning, came a new report that showed that there's water scarcity in Nevada, and it is so scarce that according to the Reno Gazette Journal, the newspaper, quote, water scarcity in Nevada hits critical mass, State Director of Natural Resources says. Then there's a photograph of the gigantic lake that is almost dry. And it says, due to long-term drought and climate change, Lake Mead's water levels continue to fall. And then it goes through what the director said. He says, the water in Nevada is so low that we're at critical mass, or the breaking point when it comes to the problem of water scarcity. When asked on Nevada newspapers, being the reporters, if the development of a proposed relief airport would push southern Nevada to the point of critical mass of its water supply, the director says, to be blunt, I think we are already at that point, quite honestly. And the article goes on to talk about how, yes, we are at that point. Nevada, and I've told you there are 20 states are not sustainable in the future, and Nevada is one of them, along with Colorado and Kansas and Arkansas and Nebraska and 80% of Texas and 100% of California and South Dakota. And so when you start looking at all the different states, Georgia and northern Florida, when you look at what's not sustainable for the future, it takes a certain will to learn when are the crises going to happen. Today, also, there was a report showing from the Washington Post that there is now a cyclone bomb. We've never had one in history, but now we will, coming at the West Coast, where there's huge winds, 100 mile an hour, and rains and freezing, and that's going to hit them, and that's the new norm. So every day around the world, we're having this happen. So what the gentleman was saying is correct. Here is where I would look at something that we don't examine, and I've mentioned several times, Occam's razor. Occam, well, it's O-C-C-A-M, but it also can be spelled O-C-K-H-A-M or O-C-H-A-M. It comes from the Latin novaculo Occami, or the law of Parsippany, and which in lay language just means entity should not be multiplied without necessity, meaning don't look for complexity, look for simplicity. So here's where I would take a different view. No society just collapses all at once, nor will ours. We will have places that are no longer insurable. Well, once someone's not going to insure something, people are not going to live there. So you're going to start seeing places for about 65 million Americans near the ocean, clear around the whole continent, that are not going to be insured, nor in fire areas where they'd be insured. So then you're talking about over 100 million people are not going to have insurance for fire or hurricane or water damage or flooding. So would you be willing, with all that we have with extreme weather events, to live in those areas? You also have nothing being done by government. In fact, the government's biggest problem, this is where we go to Occam's razor, is you have to look at what is the simplest solution. The simple solution is to stop, and this is not an easy challenge, but it's necessary. If you want to delay the consequences of global warming, you can't stop them at this point, then you have to get off the capitalist greed model of continued growth. You have to rescind growth and start looking for ways of downsizing everything in your life. And he is right. Now, look at Greta Thunberg. She came over here and had more media than any person in history. And she became a worldwide celebrity. They even wanted to give her a Nobel Prize for nothing. She did nothing to deserve a Nobel Prize. She's just a young, impressionable 16-year-old who has been highly motivated by the people manipulating behind the scenes because they have a different agenda than hers. Her innocence was exploited. And now she's going to find herself in the next year or two with a big letdown because she didn't have millions of people joining. We have had an increase in meat consumption, not a reduction. You're not going to change people's comfort habits. Our biggest addiction is comfort. No one's going to give it up. The professionals, the lawyers, doctors, engineers, scientists, the millionaires, they're going to give up their mansions. They're going to give up their private jets. They're going to give up their all the things they buy that they don't need. No way. None of them are. That's one-fifth the American population, or 20%. So that's going to continue. We increased our global pollution contributing last year by 2.3% in the United States. We had to reduce it. We increased it. So we're not going to reduce anything. We're not going to change anything. And we're going to commit ourselves only to being concerned when someone reminds us we should be concerned. Then it becomes a theatrical experience. It's like going to hear a concert. You get excited, go to the concert, can enjoy it or not, but you don't come home and change your life because of what happened at the concert. So we are confusing the very people who I said earlier in the program were spoiled brats, and their parents spoiled even more. These are not models of austerity, spirituality, or humanistic principles, or connected with the sentient life in this universe. They eat the meat. They can afford to. They want to eat the most expensive meat at the best restaurants. It's all a game. So I ask again, who's supposed to do the changing? The answer is no one's going to. Therefore, we're not going to be rescued. We're not going to have anything slow down, but we will start to see places that are no longer going to be habitable, and that's starting already now. Over the weekend and continuing today, Belgium, in Germany, in parts of France, and in Great Britain, there were flooding, and in Italy, and one Italian official said, we're seeing damage of a biblical nature because of this storm that's going on and this flooding. They got 3 months worth of rain in 24 hours. So, did you see about it? Was it important? No. So we have to start looking what we can do together to increase the quality of our life at the same time of making it simpler. So that's my rebuttal to that. Now, excuse me, we're going to take a break for just a minute here, and I'm going to offer something that I think you'll find of importance, certainly for those of you who care about the future and care about surviving, I'm offering a water filter by itself with a 3-hour CD of what to do when disaster strikes. I'm talking about any disaster striking anywhere. And it could be flooding, it could be fire, it could be earthquake, it could be solar storm. The two things you need are food and water. I'm not offering any food today because most people said they had green stuff, red stuff, and muscle. Fine. But they don't have the knowledge of what to do in great details, 3 hours of details, nor do they have this 22-ounce filter. And we have it to ship immediately. But I have Dr. Roy Spicer on the phone now. He is a PhD from Rutgers University in microbiology. And his entire career has been spent studying water and being way ahead of the curve of telling people clear back 6 years ago when the Flint scandal was getting into high gear. He said, you think Flint's the problem? Every community in the United States has water problems, and people are getting sick by drinking tap water. They don't know what's in it. So this will also help resolve that issue. Nice to have you with us today, Roy.
Good to be with you, Gary.
Roy, tell people about this 22-ounce portable filter. They can carry it anywhere. They can travel with it. I wouldn't go anywhere without this filter because I don't trust the water in a foreign country, even in a hotel in the United States or coming out of a public faucet. And I can instantly have the water I need for my body in just minutes, not hours. So tell them about why this filter is so important for everyone.
First, Gary, you have two uses for this type of filter. You have the normal or abnormal contaminants that we normally find in water, considered cancer risks such as chlorine, industrial chemicals, heavy metals. And then you have the additional risk that you have when you have flooding conditions or emergency severe weather conditions. Then you have to deal with bacteria and parasites and other microorganisms that can cause disease. So you need a filtration device that can be used in all circumstances, daily, in your home, when you travel, in your office, when you go to the gym, even in restaurants, or giving it to your children at school so they don't drink contaminated water. This is a phenomenal technology which can reduce and eliminate a whole range of contaminants, including lead, heavy metals, chlorine, industrial chemicals, bad taste, and bacteria and parasites such as Cryptosporidium and E. coli. I've been reviewing the test data, and the test data has confirmed that there are over 99%+ of these contaminants removed by this portable filtration bottle. It's very simple to use. You just fill it up, squeeze it, the water goes through this filter, and you have a straw. You just drink the water. It can be used 150 times. So it gives you gallons and gallons of water anywhere, on the go, anywhere you have a situation where there's an emergency. You can put it in a backpack. It's the most portable device that I've ever seen on the marketplace, and this is fourth-generation technology. It's the latest technology to remove the widest range of contaminants. So I strongly recommend that everyone have one or two and make sure their family members have one for any situation.
Okay, so what we're going to do is this. We're going to offer the filter that everyone should have because when you want to have water, you want to make sure that it's been filtered properly. And I defy anyone to show me a portable filter that filters out more than this you can carry around with you. It's the latest technology in the world because it's instant. And also, when there's a crisis, you have it filtered. You have it right there. And because you're going to listen to the 3-hour explanation for every possible type of preparation, best places to live in the United States, I go into that. The most problematic places to live, I go into that. What to do as far as storing food, what kind of food. There's some food you can store that'll last 5 years and others that'll last 25 years. You know, it's time to start thinking about these issues because every day there's someone in the world who didn't plan on the future and now has no future. They just have wreckage. Italy, Belgium, France, right now, today. And think of the people on the West Coast who didn't think about being prepared and the fire came. Think of Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama. Think of the flooding there, North Carolina, Georgia, same thing. Florida, still not over the hurricane from 2 years ago. People didn't plan. So I want people to know what to do so that wherever you're at, you can plan. What if you're a single person living in the city? What if you're family? What if you're an older person? All this is included in the information. So you're getting a tremendous amount of information that can empower you. And then you can take your time and make your choice, but at least you have the basics. And here's the number that you can call and get this. It's only $49.95. That's it, $49.95. It's a huge value. You're getting it for almost half price. Call, and we have some in stock. I think we have 20 in stock, and after that, then you just got to wait till we get some more in. All right, so the number to call is 877-627-5065. There'll be Diane and Sandy there to help you take your order, and we're going to get it right out. 877-627-5065. You're going to get this phenomenal, and you can put it right in your purse and right in your pocket, right in your back knapsack. It holds 22 ounces of water. So you could also say, well, I'm going to go someplace today with my family, and we're going to need about 100 ounces of water. Fine. In 5 minutes, you got your 100 ounces of water and put it in whatever container you want, and you're good to go. So this is the latest in the evolution, fourth generation of making this the best it is. You're getting rid of parasites and bacteria and cryptosporidium and all these other very nasty things that are in our water. So everyone should have this. Call 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065, and you're getting it at a huge discount until supplies last. And so those who call are going to get it. Others, we're going to have to wait until they make more. And I don't know how long that'll be, but however long it is, it is. All right, so there you have it, everyone. A powerful show today because it's a true, honest look at what's happening without any political, ideological limitations to the truth. Have a nice day.